I sat a 10-day retreat at Spirit Rock. It's been a while now. But one of the teachers was a woman named Anna Douglas, a wonderful teacher from Colorado. And actually, this today is really her inspiration. Because she was talking about her experience in the Dharma. And she had mentioned that she had the opportunity to travel to Nepal. And she sat with a very esteemed Rinpoche. I don't know his name, although if it weren't for him, we wouldn't have a title today. She said that she was very humbled, and she knew that she was in the company of a holy man, you know? And she just felt really, you know, she dropped down into this authenticity in his presence. And, you know, the tradition and the Tibetan tradition is that you hand this white scarf, you know, and then the Rinpoche kisses it and he gives it back to you and puts it around your neck, sort of a blessing, sort of a gift. And that all occurred. And then it was a moment, you know, so they had eye contact and she had a moment to say something and she said, you know, telling a little like you just did, you know, I've been practicing for whatever, however many years, and I've been studying the Dharma, now I'm teaching it. And she said, I just tried to bow to the mystery. And the Rinpoche said, be the mystery. That's why that hit me so hard. It's like, wow, that really is it, you know. And I think about what it means to be the mystery. And, you know, when I look in the mirror, naked, in particular, not so mysterious. It doesn't look particularly mysterious. And I'm often really not so happy with what I see. You know, especially the last, I'd say, 25 years of my life. There was a time when I was, you know, I looked in the mirror and felt really good about who the image on the other side. But these days, you know, gaining weight, a little older, less hair, you know, all that stuff. It's sort of like, you know, an aversion even to my own image. And hard to hold, you know, this sort of negative feeling about, you know, there have been times, fortunately not today, maybe, you know, 40 pounds ago, I didn't even recognize myself. It's like, well, it doesn't look like me, you know? It doesn't look like who I think I should be or whatever, you know? So really, a disconnect with my own body. And yet recently, you know, I just happen to have all these really inspiring friends. And so on Facebook, I can never go on Facebook without, you know, just being filled with wonder. Because they're so inspiring, these people. They come up with all this stuff, you know. So these are a couple of the things, you know, because we talk about, that's my relative truth, that I'm looking in the mirror and seeing someone that I'm unhappy with, for whatever the causes and conditions of my life and the messages from society that say I'm the wrong shape or whatever it is, right? It's all causes and conditions, really. You know? And that's my relative truth some days. You know, some days. Some days I look in the mirror and think, it's just right. Today's good. You know? But what's the absolute truth? Because that's just my little truth. You know, we talked about it earlier, just like you were saying, Vanessa, that when you looked at your fear just a little bit, when you opened up the picture, really, there's no reason for it, you know, in some way. And the absolute truth is that every adult has 19 billion capillaries and 60,000 miles worth of blood vessels. Side by side, they would circle the earth twice. And that's not all of us together. This is just any one of us, right? That the cells in our bone marrow churn out 100 trillion molecules of hemoglobin a second. That's 6 1,000 trillion molecules every minute just to deliver oxygen throughout our system. So, you know, we think, oh, the breath, and maybe we think about the nose or the belly rising, and it is so much more than that, right? That this is kind of recent, that 90% of the cells in our bodies are microbes, and they're not really us, they're some other living organism. Well, that's really a mystery, isn't it? Because I think, oh, that was my arm I just touched, you know. And really, no, it's not true. The absolute reality is that 90% of us is some other kind of living organism that makes us up. There's 100 billion neurons in the brain. That's hard to think about, you know. In Buddhism, there are the notion of the four imponderables. There were those four things the Buddha taught to never think about. And it's written in the scriptures, because you will become unhinged. You know, so like, what is the purpose of life? You know, what is the meaning with meditation? You know, just, they're imponderable. We can't, in this limited body, comprehend these things. So don't, you know. So, 100 billion neurons in the brain, that's 1 billion gigabytes of information. I don't even know what a gigabyte is. What is a gigabyte? Does anyone know? Is that 1,000 bytes?
No, it's 100 million bytes.
100 million bytes, a gigabyte?
Yeah, I think.
Wow. So, 100 million gigabytes. So, you know the internet, how big it is and how expansive it is. There's, you know, the archive that stores all the information of the internet is only 4.5 times larger than the storage capacity of our brains. What? You know, imponderable. Now then, you know, so we're up in the head here, and then if you go into the gut, you know, this is where I have all my trouble. It's roughly 26 feet in length, hammered flat. The gut would cover the surface of a tennis court. 70% of our immune activity occurs there, and the gut has its own nervous system, and now they're coming to find that there's a whole neuromass, that there's a second brain in the belly. You know, this is, oh, my gut instinct. My gut is telling me that, in fact, actually, there is intelligence down there, right? There's intelligence down there. And this notion of a second brain in the body and here. And actually, all the trouble came from when we paid attention only to the neck up, all the devastation of the planet, associated with patriarchy and war, that really this is more the maternal, the female, the gut instinctual, you know. And we haven't been paying attention to that. And now, just now, even though it came out in the early 1920s, the information is becoming more succinct. So, it's got as many neurons as the spinal cord, and can be associated with depression, you know, because things happening there, all the sensitivity. And so, you know, I look in the mirror and I say, wow, couldn't you change it? You know, suffering really is looking at reality and wishing it were different, right? And so, like, that's what's real, you know. But the truth is that even if I'm unhappy with the image, I always, now my new practice is, you're a miracle. You know, it's just a miracle the way this body is operating here for 61 years. You know, and even just the way you were talking. We're standing out there in the breeze. How many people wish they could stand in the breeze, you know, that don't even have that much capacity? Regardless of how flexible we are or are not, we could stand in the breeze, you know. some people can't stand up, you know. So we really are the mystery, you know, and we don't even know it often. We don't remember it, you know. So this is the new image in the mirror. You are the mystery, you know. You are a miracle. Einstein once said, "One cannot help but be in awe when one contemplates the mysteries of eternity, of life, of the marvelous structure of reality. It is enough if one tries to comprehend a little of this mystery every day. Never lose a holy curiosity." So, you know, in Buddhism we talk a lot about emptiness, you know, and anatta, no self, you know. Well, the science is proving that the Buddha, 2,600 years ago, was absolutely right. Absolutely right. Now, this isn't relative or what we think. This is absolute truth. So the subatomic, now we're talking about the body, but the subatomic physics of all of this is that emptiness really is reality, right? That there is far more empty space than there is matter. So we know everything is made up of atoms, right? Our bodies are made up of atoms. And I don't know if you can imagine an atom, but you know it's got a nucleus, a little ball in the middle, and then it's got these little electrons floating around it, you know? Sort of like its own little solar system. You know, maybe the ball would be the sun and the planets around it, you know? And they're discovering that atoms are 99.9999999% empty space. What? How do you hold that? This, you know, not, I mean, it's not even a 100th of 1%. It's much, much less. So we think we're solid, but really, we're not, you know. We think the bell's ringing is solid, but it's not, you know. So if you took the nucleus of an atom and enlarged it a million times, right, it would be the size maybe of a grain of sand, right? You can imagine that, right? The center of an atom. And the electrons floating around it would be like maybe dust motes in the air, you know. When the light is just right, you see those tiny little particles in the air, you know. Except that the dust mote from the nucleus would be half a mile away. That's just unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, we really are the mystery. And this is our bodies, right? So there's this lovely Zen saying that says, "Things are not as they seem, nor are they otherwise." Because really, when I look in the mirror, there's so much more there than I'm actually noticing, you know? Or recognizing, or understanding, or even able to comprehend. I mean, the new one now, first of all, you know, we are traveling the Earth. We're on this planet. You know, all you have to do is look at a night full of stars, a sky full of stars. It's like, wow, what's out there? But another one of the imponderables, you know. And there's human life on this and every other kind of life here. It's like, this guy, it's just so vast, and this is only our galaxy and whatever, you know. And we are traveling 220 kilometers per second. That's 483,000 miles an hour on this planet. And, you know, they put up a new Hubble telescope. So they are actually taking pictures now of other galaxies. And they've got this picture of what they're referring to as the Sombrero Galaxy. Because it looks like a sombrero, but it is so far away. 125 million light years away. That's traveling at the speed of light. 125 million light years away. And they've got a picture of it? I mean, you know, it's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, and that's just what we can see of the universe. You know, the Michio Kaku, you know, the physicist from New York, talks about it's not just a universe, it's a multiverse, that there's another one underneath that one, and maybe one comes up and overlaps on top of the other one. Wow. Yeah. And this Sombrero galaxy has 800 million suns the size of ours. I mean, I can't even think about 800 million marbles. Never mind suns the size of ours. And then, what's amazing, all of those suns and our bodies were made of the same stuff. Mm-hmm. We're absolutely made of the same stuff. So, really, regardless of whether you want to buy it or believe in it, we really are the mystery, and we're a part of it. And there's no way we could not be. You might want to try to separate yourself from it, but it just isn't going to go. It's absolutely awesome. So we do, this is Johannes Kepler, we do not ask for what useful purpose the birds do sing. For song is their pleasure, since they were created for singing. Similarly, we ought not to ask why the human mind troubles to fathom the secrets of the heavens. The diversity of the phenomena of nature is so great, and the treasures hidden in the heavens so rich, precisely in order that the human mind shall never be lacking in fresh nourishment. So, many years ago, another lifetime, I was, I'm a theater major, and so I was offered a job as the director of theater at a summer arts camp in New Jersey. And I had a crew of kids, you know, and we were putting on plays, but I wanted them to write their own stories, and I wanted to stage their true stories, you know, it was really important. And you know, there were a lot of Jewish people at this camp, both the students, many were Jewish, and there were many Jewish artists, you know, from all over the world, actually. I was in really remarkable company. So I had, you know, what was some of the best theater students there. You know, they all wanted to do this, you know, show. And I said, so write your story, you know. And this one young man had to be, what, 15? Wrote the story of the Star of David, you know, that being Jewish, you know, and that I am the owner of the star, I'm the owner of the Star of David, it has carried my people across the desert, it has carried my people across the Red Sea, and when I bow under the weight of my people, they carry me. 15, you know? So I knew I had the end of the show right there. That was it, you know? We're going to end on that, you know? So, you know, it was an arts camp, and there was all kinds of things going on. And I thought, well, we really need to see the Star of David, you know, the six-pointed star, you know, in this show. So I went to the art barn, and there was a Jewish sculptress there. And I said, can you create a gobo, this little piece of metal, with a Star of David cut out that we could put in front of the theater light so that we can show this lit-up Star of David on the back wall of the theater? You know, right at the end, I was thinking, it'd be great, right? And then, you know, I remember going into the music room, and they had all kinds of instruments. There were two harps just sort of hanging out in the corner. So, you know, it's lunch and everybody's eating and it's really crazy. I said, wait. I said, there are two harps in the music room, because I thought for some reason this was going to work, that it would be nice to have harp music, you know. So here comes this Russian cellist, Jewish also. I said, I need somebody to play the harp. Does anybody play the harp? And he said, well, John, what do you want? I said, well, you know, traditional Jewish melodies would work for me, you know. He said, I think I can do that. So I've got the whatever and the kids and this beautiful poem. And then at the end, I had them strike a pose, right? Like Madonna. And they were each one, there were six of them on stage, and they were each one of the pinnacles of the star. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They took that pose. We had the light shine right up on the back wall with the harp going. Well, it brought the house down. Okay. It was a great show. They had never seen anything like it. It was fabulous. And I had a picture of that last moment. And I took it home with me. And for months and months after this event, I couldn't stop staring at this picture. This picture was like, I was obsessed with it. It was a good show, but I was obsessed with this photo, right? So then I traveled home to Malta, where I was born, right? And I lived there when I was an adolescent, and I visited many, many times. But, you know, I just wanted to learn more about the mystery of what the heck am I, you know, it's a mystery that I'm sitting here right now, having been born on a tiny Mediterranean island, you know. And so I went to the National Library, and I said, do you have any information about my name? He said, well, the librarian said, of course, we've got a whole book of all the crests, the family crests. So I open it up, and I go to Mifsud, and my family crest is dated 1019. In 6 years, it'll be 1,000 years old. And wouldn't you know, right in my family crest is a Star of David. And not just a Star of David, but the bottom one has a little bit of a tail. So it was a shooting Star of David. I really, you know, it was like, wow. You know, just sort of all came together. And who knew? Who knew? There was no way I could have known, you know? So, all of that to say that even when we are not aware that we are participating in the mystery, we're still a mystery, you know? Can't separate yourself from it. It is the absolute reality, you know? I liken it to, I remember when I was in Seattle, I used to go every couple of times a month to this death society, these people who had near-death experiences, you know what I mean? And they would talk about them, and this one woman said she had a near-death experience, and she said that she was surrounded by light. And she said, I was only a pinhead of light in what was a huge sun, a huge sun, but I was still a part of it. So that's our reality, really. One of the teachers at EBMC is Anushka Fernandepuy, and she says, we are all fragile creatures whose time on this planet is limited and unknown. Perhaps doing this practice will help us be more forgiving and grateful. We can connect with the poignancy and the beauty of our lives. Spend our precious time wisely and treat people in ways that we will not later regret. And she talks about death as being always present, that if you're aware that it's going to come to an end, then you enjoy the present. Spend your life fully with integrity. And one last note, Wendell Berry, he says, it may be that when we, this ties into what you're talking, it may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. And when we no longer know which way to go, we have begun our real journey.
Thank you, John.
Oh,
thank you.
I'm a mere trillion.
And a couple of minutes over.
We're all liquid.
I'm a tennis court.
Flattened.
Oh, fabulous.
So, yeah, if I were to ask you, if you were to write a note to a friend right now, how would you do it? Would you send an email? Would you text? Or would you write it with a pen? How many would write it with a pen or a pencil? Okay. Then there are those, right? The rest of us would type somehow, right? Okay? That's fine. That's fine. Or you might call.
No. I would be the note.
You would be the note? Well, you know, there's a place for that too. I was talking with one of my funders this week, and I sent her an email, you know, but they were moving offices, you know, and then she called me right back, and she said, I just wanted to let you know we're moving offices, and I don't have, they can't find my computer. It was lost. And I said, well, you got the message anyway, because I just emailed you. So, like, you know, for whatever it's worth. Yeah. So, I'd like to do another exercise, similar to the Nolis Drop Everything, again from Anna Douglas, and I want to give credit where it is due, this marvelous teacher from Denver. And it's a meditation exercise, so find that pose that you can hold for a while. So, you know, we talked, Noli so beautifully addressed all of our concerns and the daily arisings of fear that happen for us because we are human, you know? And whatever the relative reality is, the absolute reality is we are human and we are subject to these emotions. So I want you not to worry about them, that in fact here in this room we are safe. You know? What is the worst that could happen? And think just about this sentence, if you will. If it were me, I would say, for example, I am John sitting here now. And I will just say, I am blank, sitting here now, so you can fill in the blank with your name, right? So closing our eyes, and let's take a couple of deep breaths together here. So that we inhale for 4 counts, hold for 4, and release for 4. And a little bit of sound so that we can feel and sense one another in the room. One heart, one breath. Inhale. Hold. Exhale. We're not alone today. Inhale. Hold. Release. One more inhale. Hold. Release. And after this community breath, the invitation is to find your own breath and allow it to settle into its own tempo. There's nothing you have to do. It's a part of the mystery. Your body will breathe. No matter how long you try to hold your breath, eventually it will breathe if you're lucky. I am blank, sitting here now. And I invite you to visualize the words so that you've either typed them up or you've texted them or you've written them on a note. I am blank, sitting here now. And it's as if you had made a typo or had written an error. Use your backspace, or if you're writing longhand, use a pencil and get the eraser. And remove the last word of the sentence. See it? Intentionally remove it. I am blank, sitting here. Notice sensations arise, anticipation of what's coming, trying to predict the future. Just be with this moment. I am blank, sitting here. Again, backspace, remove the last word. I am blank, sitting. I am blank, sitting. Notice sensations in the body. Where might they land? Ideas arising. Emotions. Where might you locate the emotions in the body? I am blank, sitting. Okay, flip that pencil, get the eraser, hit the delete button, the backspace. I am blank. Breathe. I am blank. Notice. Notice your vitality, your sense of aliveness. And deeply breathe. Try to relax as much as possible. Self, so now we're going to erase our names. Take your little eraser or your little backspace button. I am. The inevitable, the imponderable.
Thank you, John. We want to spend a few minutes just unpacking that. Not just the exercise, but... I'm going to unpack anatta. Unpack this idea of no self and how that exercise landed for you.
At the end of the unconscious.